So this is Ray Giannini. It is March 3rd, 2021. We're continuing in our study in the life of Jacob, and I'll be doing Genesis 30 tonight. Neil, I would like to, can I go ahead and share screen then?
Yeah, I thought I gave you
the gallery.
There we go. Okay, let's get to the top here. So as I mentioned for the recording, we are continuing the life of Jacob and we wanted to look at Genesis 30. First, I would just like to do a little bit of review and especially for folks that might've missed the last time. And let's just take a look at a couple of PowerPoint slides here just to review going all the way back to Genesis 28, just touching on a few topics, then to 29 and then 30. So if you recall, we were talking about Jacob, and in this particular case in Genesis 28, Jeff Takkus was going through the review of Jacob's life. And we find out that Jacob had departed after using some deception on his brother Esau. But then we also saw that Isaac attempted to bless Esau over Jacob, and then effectively that was corrected. And so Isaac then gave Jacob this pure and legitimate blessing, and there was no holding back. Isaac specifically passed on to Jacob the blessing God had given both Abraham and Isaac, and Isaac reiterated the blessing from God Almighty El Shaddai pertaining to prosperity and the land. And finally, those inheriting the blessings of the Abrahamic covenant were not to endanger those blessings by intermarrying. We saw Esau doing that, but of course God has chosen a particular line to work with, ultimately to spread the word to the world, ultimately. And so Jacob is sent away to visit his uncle Laban in Padan Aram, which we saw. A little bit more review here, the promises of the covenant confirmed at Bethel. Jacob has this vision at Bethel based on God's pure grace. God is visiting Jacob, and Jacob begins this program of character, his character being matured and his faith growing. We saw that in the sermon on Hebrews 12 that I did, where the book writer of the book of Hebrews looks back on chapter 11 and looks to the enduring faith of these heroes of faith displayed there. And Jacob is one of those. And over time, faith continues to grow and God tests and asks his servants to do more and more. God appears to Jacob to assure him of his promise of blessing and protection. And then this stimulates, as we also consider the promise of God, this worshipful response. And the Lord specifically answers the question that he is the God of Jacob. He was the God of Isaac. He's the God of Abraham. We see in the New Testament in present tense, God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he shows Jacob, as a result of that, Jacob's outlook is dramatically changed. Jacob stops for the night on his way to visit his uncle. He sees this stairway extending into heaven. And the point is that God makes it clear that he is present. He's going to be present wherever Jacob goes. And Jacob is given these reassurances that the land that was promised to his grandfather and father will be his, and to protect Jacob as he goes on his journey. Now we look at chapters 29 through 33. They form a block. It displays how God keeps his promise with Jacob. He blesses Jacob abundantly. We're going to see that tonight. But also God disciplines this patriarch. And we're going to see a little bit of that also. Here is just, again, a review of Jacob's worshipful response. As a result of this vision that he sees, he has fear before the Lord. He puts up a stone pillar. He anoints it with oil. He names the place Bethel, a house of God. He makes a vow in which he expresses for the first time his faith in the Lord. The Lord will be my God. And he promises to tithe, give 10% of that abundance that God is going to give him. And we saw last time that these promises were fulfilled, except for tithing. We don't know. I assume that he did. Here's the structure of Jacob's prayer in Genesis 28. Once again, he says, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I might come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God and this stone pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. Now, this prayer is the prayer of someone who's fairly mature in the Lord. It's kind of almost seems performance oriented, but ultimately it's the beginning of this great faith of endurance shown in Jacob's life. As we saw before, I stole this map from Jeff, and I'm unapologetic about it because he's got some great maps. And if you can see this, for some reason, sometimes this isn't fully displayed, he goes on this long, long journey to visit his uncle. This is another map that shows his whole life, this whole circuit journey that he makes. He starts out in Beersheba, he goes to Bethel. So Act 1, Beersheba. Act 2, he travels to Haran. And then Act 3, he has this encounter with Laban. There's a whole lot of business that goes on. He's going to come back, travel back to Canaan. And then finally in Act 5, we're going to see, Joel actually will be doing this portion, the evil that occurs in Shechem. As we talked about previously, Jacob's journey very much mirrors the journey that Eliezer made. There are many, many, many parallels to the journey. In Eliezer's case, there is Abraham makes him take a promise that he will accomplish the task. And in one of the great examples in the Bible, Eliezer, as the promise is fulfilled, he sees Rebecca and he sees her do all of these things that he knows confirms that she's the one. He praises the Lord that his mission can be accomplished, and he does bring this wife back to Isaac. In the same way, we see Jacob traveling to obtain a wife, and that wife is exactly the wife that should be for him. And along the way, he also has another wife, Leah, and then a multitude of children that are produced by those two marriages. This is a picture of ancient the wells of in Haran, in the land of Padan Aram, just as a picture here to give you a taste of how the land looks. So tonight we're going to be looking at continuing in Genesis 29, the last couple of verses in that chapter, all the way to Genesis 30, 24, with respect to looking at the children of Jacob. And then the final portion tonight will be verses 25 through 43 of Genesis 30, Jacob's agreement. Oh, I spelled that wrong, with Laban. Should have spell checked that. So let's read Genesis 30, the first 24 verses together. And I have the New King James Version. And let's take a look at what happens here. Chapter 30, verse 1. Now, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I will die." And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God? Who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" So she said, verse 3, "Here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her." Then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has judged my case, and he also heard my voice and has given me a son." Therefore, she called his name Dan. And Rachel's maid, get back here. And Rachel's maid, verse 7, Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Verse 8, then Rachel said, "With great wrestling, I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed." So she named his name Naphtali. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, we saw that in chapter 29, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, his wife. And Leah's maid, Zilpah, bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." So she called his name Gad. Verse 12, and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you also take away my son's mandrakes?" And Rachel said, "Therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." Verse 16, then Jacob came out of the field in the evening. When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, "God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband." So she called his name Issachar. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. Verse 20, and Leah said, "God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons." So she called his name Zebulun. Afterward, she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. Then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son and said, "God has taken away my reproach." So she called his name Joseph and said, "The Lord shall add to me another son." So significantly here, I want to get past a couple, sorry, a couple of things here. Jacob, as he's continuing on his mission, he has these children. And I remember when I was at Elmbrook Church, first couple of years of being saved, I met a bunch of interesting people. And one of them was a guy, a very godly man, who was studying ancient languages at UW-Madison. And he would talk about, you know, the program that he had to go through. It was pretty rigorous, a lot of books to read. But he would also talk about the Hebrew language. And he said that the language is just filled with puns and plays on words and all sorts of interesting things. Some of the puns are dead on. They describe a person through the person's name. Some of them are humorous. Some of them are kind of a little bit odd. But it's kind of a rich language in that respect that the writer Moses inserted a lot of these things, maybe, you know, for various reasons. And tonight we'll see a lot of punning done on the names of the sons of Jacob. What we saw last time in 29 is that as Jacob continued on his mission, he has the joyful prospect of marrying Rachel, but that turned into this terrible nightmare because of Laban's deception. And in Laban, Jacob met his match. He also met the basic tool of disciplining him. So Jacob had deceived his own brother and his father, and now he was deceived by his own mother's brother. When the time came for the wedding feast we saw last time, hearts were merry, spirits were high. But in the night, Rachel's older sister, is substituted. And as I said previously, the Bible Knowledge Commentary, I just thought this was great, calls this a masterpiece of shameless treachery. Unloved Leah is given to a man in love with Rachel. Here again is Jacob's family tree. These are the children by Leah: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Dinah. So Leah is the one that is the most fertile. She's the one that bears the bulk of the children. And then through various means, Jacob's family tree grows. There's children by Bilhah, which is Rachel's maidservant, Dan and Naphtali. There are children by Zilpah, Gad and Asher. And then also Rachel has two children, Joseph in this chapter, and then in chapter 35, Benjamin. Let's look at the names of the children of Joseph. And so as we can see in the text there, there are a lot of word plays that are involved. Let me look at my notes here on the chapter. So certainly Rachel's sons through Bilhah don't reflect the faith that Leah had. Rachel felt wronged and bitter over her barrenness. This is one of the great statements, another great statement made in the Bible. She's angry, and Jacob then gets angry and says, "Am I in the place of God? Who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" This is very much like 2 Kings 5 or 7, where Israel kings Joram gets this letter from Naaman's, the king in Syria, asking the king to help Naaman, you know, get cured of leprosy because they had heard from one of the girls in Naaman's household. And he just kind of rips his clothes and he goes, "Am I God? Can I do this?" And of course, he has nothing to do with it. The Lord has everything to do with it. And so very much like Sarah, Rachel's efforts occur through her maidservant, Sarah with Hagar in Genesis 16. And the names of the two sons born to Bilhah reflect Rachel's bitter struggle and also her feeling of victory. So the name Dan, the first name that comes up here, means God has vindicated me. That is, he's now corrected Rachel's wrong, her barrenness. And then the name Naphtali reflects her great struggle. And the word, both Dan and Naphtali, sound exactly like the name. And it means I fought with my sister. So now we're seeing the continuation of this competition between the two sisters, the deception that occurred with Leah, the competition with Rachel, and it's just a kind of a sad situation that occurs. If we look at, for instance, Leah responds by offering Jacob her maidservant Zilpah. And then Gad is born. His name means fortune, and Asher are also born. So Leah saw that with God's help, she was prospering. So let's take a look again at the names of the children here. In the previous chapter 29, we saw that Reuben was born, and his name indicates the Lord had seen her misery. Here's another wordplay. "Now at last my husband will become attached to me." So we see Leah's desperate attempt to try to gain intimacy with Jacob. The second born, Simeon, is named because the Lord heard that Leah was not loved. And this is the opposite of Ishmael, which means God hears. In this particular case, Simeon is named because the Lord heard that she was not heard by her husband. Levi, the third born, is named after her hope that her husband would become attached to her. The fourth born, Judah, means let him be praised after this. Issachar, in this chapter here, is explained by the wages that she used to sort of hire her husband. Zebulun, as the double meaning of dowry or gift, as well as honor, sometimes also meaning dwelling. And finally, Dinah. This took me a bit to figure this one out. This, her name means judgment. So Leah responds by offering Jacob her maidservant Zilpah. Gad and Asher are born, and we continue on in the story here. In verses 14 through 21, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, found some mandrake plants, and they're supposedly aphrodisiacs. They're actually supposed to stimulate female infertility. And I remember when Phil Kern talked about the life of Jacob, did a great job. I wondered why it was that mandrakes are considered aphrodisiacs. And essentially, if you look at the plant, it sort of looks like a certain anatomical feature. And so this was kind of the belief that mandrakes would be aphrodisiacs. And so Rachel sees these that Reuben has picked for her mother and wants these, maybe to stimulate her own fertility. And Rachel felt they could work for her, verses 14 and 15. And one of the things that's great about the Bible is that you see this cultural influence, very much like the household gods that Rachel has. This is another marker that, in fact, these are real people with real problems, and they have some, you know, superstitious beliefs here. So therefore, Leah hired Jacob with the plants and had a son, Issachar. And he's Issachar, his name is explained by that. He is my hire, basically. The name of Leah's sixth son, Zebulun, we had talked about this double significance of meaning dowry or gift as well as honor, again reflects Leah's attempt to get closer to her husband here. And then Leah's hopes never really were fulfilled here. And then she has a daughter that is mentioned here in the text. In verses 22 through 24, Rachel finally gives birth to Joseph. And the name sounds exactly like Joseph, Yosef, I guess, but not by mandrakes. It shows that the births are given by God and not manipulated by people. Joseph's name, like Zebulun's, had a double meaning. She said, God has taken away my disgrace. And she prayed that he would add another son. And so Rachel, when she gets the son, is jubilant. She's just victorious. And so she names her son in accordance with that. So we can see that this kind of sad situation continues. And what we find then in Genesis 29, starting in verse 31, all the way to Genesis 24, is this combination of small narratives, accentuating the puns on Jacob's sons' names. And each name was interpreted by Leah or Rachel to reflect their particular family problems. Instead of naming the sons maybe more pious names, they're essentially just testimonies of what they were going through. And instead of maybe naming them reflecting the fact that God is the giver of life, they just name them almost like a diary of what was going on at the time. Another thing that we can note here is that the passage really shows how God prospered Jacob and started to make him into a great nation. All Israelites could thus look back and see their ancestry in Jacob and in the conflict of the women. As brothers, the sons of Jacob who became Israel were not to become envious like their mothers. Kind of went through some of the names here. Again, I keep emphasizing, and I think it's important, and this is something that Jeff emphasized too, it's important to keep in mind that Genesis is a book that Moses is writing to the Exodus Jews to detail the history, where they came from, and to have them remember the significance of these events, to remind them of where they came from, and that God has separated a people to himself, the Israelites, or the apple of his eye. To Israel, these narratives were more than just interesting little stories. The rivalry that appears here explains much of the tribal rivalry that followed. But Genesis is clear, God chose the despised mother Leah and exalted her to be the first mother. The kingly tribe of Judah and the priestly tribe of Levi trace back to her in spite of Jacob's love for Rachel and her son Joseph. So let's take a look at the second portion here of Genesis, starting in verse 25. Let's read that for Genesis 30, starting in verse 25. And it says here, and it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service which I have done for you. Verse 27, and Laban said to him, please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. And then he said, name me your wages, and I will give it. Verse 29, so Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming, and now when shall I provide for my own house? And so he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything. If you will do this one thing for me, I will again feed and keep your flocks. Verse 32, let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled ones among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So my righteous, my so, I'm sorry, so my righteousness will answer for me in the time to come. When the subject of my wages comes before you, every one that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. So he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and gave them into the hands of his sons. Then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Verse 37, now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white that was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters and the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they could conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked, speckled, and spotted. Verse 40, then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streaked and the brown in the flock of Laban. And then he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock. 41, and it came to pass whenever the stronger livestock conceived that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters that they might conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. Thus the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. When Jacob appealed to Laban for permission to go home, Laban bargained for him to stay, verses 27 through 28 and 31. Here a commentary says, here was Oriental diplomacy, two Bedouin leaders cautiously on guard as they negotiated. Laban stated he had learned by revealed word or divination that God had prospered him because of Jacob. You think he finally got that message through, I guess, that it was really kind of Jacob's doing here. He may have looked for omens or maybe just simply perceived this. But the dark-colored sheep were an omen for good, and perhaps an inordinate amount of them spoke of this. Who knows how he figured this out. Jacob agreed that God had blessed Laban, verse 30. And so Jacob proposed a plan by which he would, on the surface, seem to gain very little. He would receive as wages for his work the black and multicolored goats, the rarer kind, and the speckled and spotted sheep, which would be born from them. Laban thought this over very quickly. He closes the deal like a good broker does, and he could see only advantages for himself. This is Laban at his very best here. It looks like Jacob's plan is very risky. He's looking out for his own interests, hoping to gain from this and fighting for what was his. And so we have Laban's manipulation of events, which kind of added to Jacob's risk here. For greater security, Laban immediately removes all the animals of abnormal color. He gives them to his sons and not to Jacob. And as an additional precaution, he puts 3 days' journey between them. Thus, he was seeking to ensure that Jacob would have a difficult time in building up his own herd. In verses 37 through the end of the chapter, God blesses Jacob in an unusual way. Here is another word play on the name Laban. For as Jacob peeled back the barks on the sticks and exposed the white portion, or Laban, the name Laban means white and is of Hebrew origin. As he saw his flocks grow, he played Laban's game and he won. And so effectively the word play is that he beat Whitey at his own game. I hate to say it that way, but that's what it is. He beat Whitey at his own game. So as Jacob later admitted, God intervened to fulfill the expectations Jacob had in the branches. The peeled branches placed in the watering troughs appeared to make his animals very fertile and they reproduced quite a bit. as they mated in front of the troughs. In addition, Jacob used selective breeding by mating the stronger animals for himself and the weak female goats and sheep for Laban. But this was not the only time God's plan or God's part in Jacob's success was much greater than it seemed to the observer. Jacob was greatly prospered in the fulfillment of God's promise at Bethel. So it's not just increasing a flock and acquiring wealth in that way. He became wealthy in the promises of God. And as we see in his life, he becomes more and more cognizant of what the Lord's presence means, and that itself, those spiritual promises, were far greater than any of the material wealth that he could gain. So Jacob gets prosperous, as was predicted, back at Bethel. He prospers at the expense of Laban. And effectively, Laban gets the payback, or the back pay. I should say Jacob receives the back pay that was due him because of Laban's manipulations. And this, we see this kind of fascinating struggle between Jacob and Laban. Laban's injustice and his trickery, his kind of craftiness between in his dealing with Jacob. And then we see that parallel in Isaac's attempt to bless Esau, as opposed to the Lord's will that he would bless Jacob. A lot of deception here. In both cases here, there's an attempt to kind of defraud Jacob, and yet Jacob overcomes this defrauding. Afterward, however, Jacob viewed his real gain here as really the spiritual promises given to him by the Lord. So we have this struggle that's going on, the struggle among sisters and the struggle with Jacob and Laban. And the next time that we pick up the study, we're going to see Jacob's exciting flight from Laban. So let's just go back to a couple of applications here as we just end for tonight. Again, the Bible passages show how God prospered Jacob and started to make him into a great nation. The Israelites could look back on this, study these things, and draw conclusions for their own life and be impressed by God's working through Jacob and the other patriarchs. I think these stories here, as we continue in Genesis, are really fascinating, and they depict these really incredible promises, these wondrous promises that are given to the patriarchs. And I think the best thing we can see is the development of their character. So just a couple of repeating things here, but I just think that these are some incredible chapters to look at as we continue in Genesis. So, and that's all I have for tonight. Mercifully brief.
Right, I think it's interesting in the subsequent development of the tribes of Israel and the division of the tribes after King David and King Solomon, where they divided the nation between Judah and was it Israel? And the 10 tribes?
Yeah, in Israel, right.
Yeah, and so those 10 tribes are basically led by the sons of Joseph, namely Ephraim and Manasseh, were kind of the prominent tribes, and Judah and Benjamin were the principal ones in Judah. But just because, and their mothers, are from different heritage or source.
It's a great observation.
So maybe there was.
I didn't hear the last part of that. For some reason, it just kind of froze.
Maybe there were differences between the tribes or unity among the tribes early on among the brothers, but unity or the animosity between Judah and Benjamin, I guess, and the rest of the tribes, kind of, you know, if you allow that sons were the principal leaders of the other tribes, the 10 tribes, different mothers.
Yeah, I you know, it's interesting if you look at history in general. I mean, like in the Middle East, it's very tribal. There's no question about it. I remember using that story about General Petraeus, and when he was asked to kind of get the Iraq war back on track, he knew exactly where to go. There were tribal leaders that were very powerful. They were not working with the U.S. Army in you know, getting things settled. And you got to deal with these powerful tribes. And so I think the Bible stories here are very emblematic of, you know, Middle Eastern culture. I think it's fascinating. Any other thoughts?
Ray, it's Neil. What is your take on the speckled and spotted portion of where Jacob has kind of a speckled or spotted sheep are born, but they're, you know, they're not really speckled or spotted, right? I mean, are that, like, if they got dirty, they're, you know, they're just kind of dirty, but are they legitimately speckled and spotted? So what's your take on this? Maybe I'm not asking my question right, but I don't know. Do you get what I'm getting at?
Are you asking whether his techniques for increasing his herd had any value to them, valid and all? Or was there anything spiritual, or was there divine guidance in doing that?
Well, I mean, let's just say, if I, you know, the technique that he used doesn't really make speckled or spotted sheep, right? So, you know, what are we to say that, you know, God miraculously made them speckled and spotted in his favor, regardless of the thing that he tried to do to make them speckled and spotted, which doesn't really do anything? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. So it's interesting to me. So Jeff turned me on to Olive Tree Bible software, and I have like just great. I can buy all the commentaries I want. I don't have to have any books anymore. And commentators have this wonderful way of dancing around difficult passages. You know, no, there's not a single one really I found that really gave any substantive answer. I think it appears to me from doing the review that Jacob kind of follows this plan that he sort of makes up, and God blesses him in that effort. Whether he could have done nothing, essentially, could have come up with that. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered what he did. The Lord would have blessed him and paid him for 20 years of hard labor. I think that's the only thing I can come up with, very much like the two sisters that are effectively competing. You know, mandrakes, they don't have any aphrodisiac value that I could see, but it's a local custom or what have you. Very much, that's my opinion. If anybody else has an opinion, I saw that Jeff was on, or somebody else, Fred Ruth.
Well, I like your answer, Ray. I mean, I guess that's, I think.
Seems to make no sense, yeah.
No, I like what you said. And I think the point is well made. I think that, you know, God blessed him. And whether he tried to do something or, to make it happen wasn't the important thing. It was that God was
blessing. Now, there could be something, I didn't mean to talk over you, Matt, sorry, but there could be something divine in the sense that Laban's name means whitey, and that Jacob, on his own, he came up with this plan to peel away these almond branches and expose the white there. Lord was behind, and that Moses wrote down his plan seems to make no sense in terms of animal breeding or husbandry. That's at least what I can tell.
Thanks.
I'm speculating that the initial choice of the speckled and the spotted creatures, there were probably less of them or fewer of them than the normal ones, which were all one color as far as a little bit I know about sheep. And doesn't that demonstrate God's blessing on Jacob?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, his incredible ability to multiply, certainly, and that everything comes from him. I mean, black sheep, these are really rare animals, it seems,
Not in the short figure family.
That's a good one.